Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Apologist segment of ARC Studies Live. I'm your host, Rick Young. ARC Studies Live is the blogcast radio outreach of the Apologetic Research Center. ARC is a Christian ministry specializing in evangelism, Christian apologetics, and counterculture studies. For more information about ARC, go to the World Wide Web at www.arcstudies.org. Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of ARC Studies Live. I'm your host, Rick Young. Okay, let's see. We've been talking about the nations of Islam over the last week or so and pretty much got through it without much of a hiccup, with the exception of a couple of phone calls. Without any real counter to the charges that were made. I know that the Imam Rashish called in, but he didn't call in pertaining to the Nation of Islam, or he didn't call as a defender or a adherent of the Nation of Islam, though he does claim to follow Warthuddin Muhammad, Elijah Muhammad's youngest son. Though, you know, and I don't want to doubt that he does, except that the majority of the information that I've gotten from him has been so sporadic. It's like, you know, I'll take a piece of everything. Recently got a link to the Peshitta organization. The Peshitta, many believe, was the Eastern Aramaic version of the Bible, and that's in doubt. In fact, I own the Lamza Bible. The Peshitta text is really championed by a group called the Way International. In fact, the site that he sent is championed by the Way International. The Way International was an organization that popped up during the late 60s or so, back during the Jesus movement, where, you know, everything from music to popping your eyelids and seeing colors was considered deity. And so there are some issues with that organization. The Peshitta text, I don't think, validates itself. I've actually studied the Peshitta, not intensely, but just rudimentary study for about the last, it's probably been about maybe 10 years. Have to be honest, haven't even looked at it before, in probably about 2 years before I got that particular article, but I have examined it well enough to conclude that it's not authoritative at all. Number one, it's not authoritative because it claims that the oldest texts of Scripture were Aramaic in the quote unquote Eastern Bible, but in reality, there are more than 25,000 manuscript copies of the Greek New Testament. 25,000. That's a bunch, dating back to within 25 years of the time they were written. And why 25 years? Because you have to understand the material they wrote on wasn't the most durable at that particular time. And so as it was passed from congregation to congregation, a lot of them dissolved. But the reality is, within 25 years is actually sufficient. I mean, we accept many things that Homer wrote. For instance, the only other piece of literature, or the next closest piece of attested literature extant today, would be Homer's Iliad. The Iliad is what the movie Troy was based on, and that's based upon documents that were copies that were 600 years later. They're 600 years after Homer died, and there were only 642 copies. We have more than 25,000 manuscript copies of the New Testament alone dating to within 25 years. The other significance of the 25 years is I'm sitting in front of me now. In fact, this series has been based upon the works of Elijah Muhammad. Well, I understand Elijah Muhammad died 32 years ago. And so individuals who were alive at the time of his writings, which I was alive actually when all of these books were written, with the exception of Supreme Wisdom 1 and possibly 2. 2 doesn't have a copyright date. And so I can attest to the things that I've seen and I've studied over the years. I remember Elijah Muhammad being alive. We had good friends of my family who were in the Nation of Islam. And so within 25 years, it's phenomenal in history. Again, there's no other work in history, and I know many will make claims, but they're making claims of other individuals' claims. And that, if you recall, when I started this series, that's exactly what I said. You know, even Paul Weirville, the individual who started the Way International, the group that champions the Lamza Bible and the Peshitta text, he basically came to his conclusion that the Way International was and of course he took that name from the Book of Acts, and we kind of talked about when individuals were called. To me, that's an irrelevant point. It's like they were called Christians in Antioch. Well, he took his name from Acts chapter 9. I believe it's Acts chapter 9, verse 2, I believe. Let me see. The master of the founding. Any who were, Acts chapter 9, verse 1 and 2. Then Saul, still breathing threats of murder against the disciples of the Lord, went to the high priest and asked letters from him to the synagogues of Damascus, so that if he found any who were of the way, whether men or women, he might bring them bound to Jerusalem. And so Paul Weirville named his organization The Way International. And he also taught that Jesus specifically talked to him with the same old refrain, the same refrain that you'll hear from all these organizations, you know, and I find it interesting that they all come up with the same claim. Mary Baker Eddy, Paul Weirville, Joseph Smith, Elijah Muhammad, the prophet Muhammad. I mean, I can go on and on and on. I'm sitting here looking at many of these books while we're talking. About Charles Taze Russell. You could just go on and on and on, you know, where they all said, well, the Bible's been tampered with and only our respective fill-in-the-blank can restore the truth. Well, that was Weirville's claim as well. The Bible has been corrupted and only I, you know, God told him this. Only I can restore the truth. Just like the angels met with John the Baptist and an angel met with Joseph Smith and told him that. Elijah Muhammad met with Farid Muhammad, who's God, and told him that. I mean, you find this over and over and over. The reality is that the biblical text stands on its own merits, and individuals who would stand off to the side and snipe at it. Now, again, I made the point over and over and over. It's not a matter of saying it's right. Whether or not you believe it's right as far from a theological perspective, I'm talking about from an evidentiary perspective. It says what it says. And so when someone comes along and says, well, you know, the truth was missing and we're restoring it, and well, we can look right at the text and see what it says. Does it say that? No, it doesn't. And it's the same with Paul Weirville. As a matter of fact, you're warned repeatedly about individuals coming saying things like that. And so, again, at the beginning of this particular series, I made that particular point, you know, that, you know, I'm not interested in individuals sitting around creating followers for themselves. I've actually watched people do that. I've watched individuals do that, create followers for themselves, not followers for Christ. And so, at any rate, it has to stand on its own merit. So, the Peshitta text, I reject. Because, again, its only authority is the individual saying that God told him it was the most correct, number one. Number two, it claims that the Old Testament was written in Aramaic. There's a Peshitta Old and New Testament. But the reality is that during the time of the Old Testament, when, and we're talking about prior to Roman domination, Hebrew was the language that repeatedly, Hebrew and Chaldean was the languages that were dominant amongst the Jewish people. Now, there were other languages that were extant as well, Babylonian, Egyptian. I mean, you can go on down the line. But I'm talking about what does the Bible say? Who's the language used in the Bible? And it's clear what the language used in the Bible were. Now, my argument isn't to turn around and say, okay, well, you know what? Babylonians didn't really speak Babylonian. That's really a Jewish word. You know, and that's the argument of other individuals. And again, without a shred of evidence, and let me make it clear, evidence is not because you heard somebody say something you agree with, and then you say, wow, that confirms what I believe. It's not reading endless books that agree with you. That's not what evidence is. Evidence is when you can take it yourself and break it down and show evidentially, not by faith, but evidentially, that it says what it says. A good example of that, again, is the other day when I made reference to the fact that Elijah Muhammad said that Christian means to be crystallized into one and that Christ means crusher, which is ridiculous. You know, again, Christian is nothing but Christ with a suffix. It means of Christ. Just like Warth Houdin's organization when they first, after Elijah Muhammad first died, and Wallace Muhammad, or Warith Houdin Muhammad now, decided to take the Nation of Islam in a more orthodox direction. The first name of the organization was the Belalians. Now, any student of Islam knows that, according to tradition, the Hadith, that Belial was considered or was supposedly one of the Prophet Muhammad's slaves or servants, and in fact was considered to be the first black person who converted to Islam, and that's why he named his organization that, because they were black Muslims. And so naming themselves after Belial, they became the Belalians. That was their first name before they became the American Community of Al-Islam in the West and whatever else they call themselves now. They were called the Belalians, I-A-N-S, those who are of Belial. Just like Christian means of Christ. But it doesn't, you know, I could say that till I'm blue in the face, even though that is a rational perspective. What I did was I went as far as to pull up the etymology of the words, and they're on the show notes page. And it shows that, in fact, that the word Christos is derived etymologically from Christalis, which means frost or ice. And hence, that's where the word crystal comes from, or our modern word crystal. As on the other hand, Christian is from the word Christianos, which, as I said, means of Christ. So that's evidence. It's not how you feel about it or trying to come up with some esoteric rendering of what someone else said and wrote, and this is secret meaning. You know, Rosicrucians. The Rosicrucians believed that everything in the Bible is fake. You know, that was Jesus' smokescreen, and he kept some private people around him whenever he spoke about Peter, James, and John, and of course there's some other ones, Mary and stuff, who are a private congregation who received the private information. You know, the whole Da Vinci Codes, a private organization. Everybody else was thrown off with a smokescreen. Individuals love to feel like, wow, we have some secret knowledge. But again, the Word of God makes it absolutely clear. Doesn't have to rely on anybody's esoteric rendering and secret knowledge. The book of 2 Peter, chapter 1, verse 19 through 21, puts it this way. We also have the prophetic word made more sure, which you do well to take heed as a light that shines into a dark place, until the day dawns and the morning star rises in your hearts. Now notice it says that it is the light, we are the dark place. So instead of coming in trying to say it's something, we need to understand what it's saying. Then we find out whether or not we agree. All right. Knowing this, that no prophecy of Scripture is of any private interpretation. It wasn't privately written and can't be privately interpreted. It's clear in what it says, Deuteronomy 29:29, the secret things belong to God. What's revealed is meant for you to know. So at any rate, you know, you have 1,000 organizations out there, like I said, who come up with all these little private little information that only they and the people around them are aware of, you know, and just because you can get a few people to follow you does not make it true. What makes it true is whether or not you have an evidential test by which you can examine it objectively. Okay, and that's what we strive for. All right, I got a caller from, looks like Imam Rajesh again, who is kind of perplexing
all these little
here for me,
information that only they and the people around them are aware of.
Sounds
you know,
like you got me running in the background, so you have the last time.
Does not make it true.
At any rate, Imam Rajesh, if you could turn that down in the background.
By which you can examine it objectively.
I'm going to have to pause you till you take that down in the background because I'm
going
to
have a caller from.
All right. He had the feed running in the background, and so it was much. You had the double, almost like the old DJs used to do the double mix. He has a 5-second delay or whatever. Imam Rajesh, again, let's try him again.
Hello?
Hello, Imam.
Hey, peace, how you doing?
How you doing? You are a perplexing individual. You have a California phone number and you live in New Jersey, huh?
No, sir, I live in Oakland, California.
Oakland, California, okay. Well, your ISP is in New Jersey. All right, anyway, I did get your information. How you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing okay. It's nice and hot in California. I'm near Berkeley, California. I'm a step away from Berkeley, borderline Emeryville and Berkeley.
Okay. That's where I thought you were from. So I just
thought
it was interesting. I was looking at the site stats from the website, and I noticed that your ISP was coming from New Jersey. That happens. That could be where it originates at. How can I help you today?
Yeah, I wanted to apologize. I had a car trouble, and a lot of the information I did send you, I will agree, was bifurcated and split up and dismantled. The person who I was studying with from the Jolliffe Empire, from Sheikh Anta Diaz University, their site is under construction, so I couldn't get to the original documents that I had on my laptop that blew up. So I had to go get other information that would be consistent of what I was saying. Now, that might be in question also still, but I wanted to say my initial intent. I need to state that because I never stated that because I'm not here to argue, you know, and get into that. And I find this is probably an unprecedented act for us to, you know, to speak like this and won't have any bias or don't, you know, no heat and no animosity and whatnot. And so that's not my intent, is to persuade you into what I believe in, et cetera. Like you said, truth is clear from falsehood. So that's why I didn't come with the biblical approach of saying the Bible was this and the Bible was that. I never was like that.
Mm-hmm.
But you made some statements in reference to the Bilalians.
Mm-hmm.
Bilal was not a slave of Muhammad. Bilal was from Ethiopia, Abyssinia, which was known Abyssinia before Ethiopia.
Mm-hmm.
And he was bought by Abu Bakr. Bought by him.
And Abu Bakr
was
who to Muhammad?
That was one of his companions.
One of his companions? And,
yes.
Okay. As a matter of fact, he was the third caliph, wasn't he?
Well, you know, that caliph term has his other ramifications.
Okay, I don't want to sidetrack
you.
I'm just,
Yes, sir.
Okay, go ahead.
But at any rate, Muhammad didn't have no slaves, period. He was freed. And in fact, in the tradition itself, Bilal entered in to heaven before Muhammad did. That's in the tradition itself. So you check that reference also. But besides that, there's a comment and statement being made in reference to Akhenaten and the Moses of the Bible that I heard.
Well,
so,
let's stop for a second about the you made a comment that Muhammad didn't own slaves.
Mm-hmm.
You do realize that a lot of individuals disagree with that. And lots of individuals disagree with that. As a matter of fact,
they can disagree.
Many would say that Muhammad not only owned slaves, but that he sold them as well. If you are you familiar with Sahih Bukhari?
I'm familiar with all the books that you can name about Islam.
Okay, well, if you look in Volume 3, Book 36...
Mm-hmm.
You'll find this quote. A man amongst us declared that his slave would be freed after his death. The prophet called for that slave and sold him. The slave died the same year. And so that's a quote from from that particular tradition of Hadith.
Right.
That the prophet called for the slave and sold him. And there's no other way you can really interpret that except
right.
to say that Muhammad sold a slave. Now, I'm saying that from the perspective of it doesn't make him a bad person.
No.
All right? So I'm not trying to kick him for that because that happened during that time period. You know,
okay.
I'm not talking about the right or wrongness of it. I'm talking about the fact that evidentially that would give you an indication that yes, he did. Not only was he comfortable selling slaves, did he potentially also own them himself?
Yes. In response to that, sir, Sahih Bukhari himself never met Muhammad. That's the first thing. And all the traditions of Hadith is only recordings by him, Tirmidhi, Sahih Muslim, etc. Doesn't have anything to do with Muhammad. They say there are the recordings of Muhammad, like you would have somebody said the recordings of Jesus would be Paul, Mark, Luke, Matthew, or John.
Well,
so
there is a difference. There's a difference because
big difference.
Well, the difference is this: that as it pertains to the Christian scriptures or the Bible, yes, Paul and Peter and Mark, yes, we believe under the inspiration, or just in, if you want to say in general. Yes, they wrote these things, but there was collaboration from other eyewitnesses, and we accept then those things that were written as, in fact, being what happened.
Right.
Not to mention the fact, I'm not even going to go into the predictive prophecy of the Old Testament. When you're looking at the Hadith was, because Muhammad, the Quran itself, did not exist. It was not written during the lifetime of the Prophet Muhammad. Everything was oral. There were individuals who may have taken notes during
right.
his sermons or whatever you want to call
yeah.
them, but it did not exist. In fact,
okay, so,
it was only after he died that
right.
some of his cantors, individuals who listened to him speak over and over and over and could therefore recite word for word what he was saying, a number of them died in a battle, and that's when it became an effort to write all these things down.
Right.
And so likewise, individuals also kept track in the Hadith during the lifetime of
right.
of Muhammad, things that occurred, things that he
right.
did. In fact, the most famous one that most people will be familiar with is Salman Rushdie and the Satanic Verses.
Okay. Are you teaching me Islam at this point?
Am I what now?
Are you teaching me Islam at this
Am
point?
I teaching you Islam? I am. No,
yes.
We are having a discussion
okay.
in which I'm talking about Islam.
Okay.
I'm talking
right, Salman
about
Rushdie.
What I've studied about Islam.
Yes. Okay, Salman Rushdie is long before what we are stating about Sahih Bukhari, the Isnad, the chain, the narrations that were written after Muhammad's life, 200 years after his life. He never okayed anyone to write anything. In fact, he told him to stop writing. When he found out they was writing something other than the Quranic text itself, he was correct. It is oral.
But you know,
like all scripture.
But do you realize you just, I'm trying to understand.
I mean, if you don't give me a chance to respond.
I understand, but you said Salman Rushdie and you mentioned Bukhari as if they lived at the same time.
No, what I'm saying
you
is.
You know who Salman Rushdie is, right?
Yeah, but I'm saying is, in reference to Sahih Bukhari, and then we can talk about if we're going to have some, you know, form of discussion until another caller comes to where we can address the allegation of him having a slave.
Okay.
Actual word slave is Slavic. So
okay.
the word slave is not there. Muhammad had no slaves. And it's hearsay because the person said Muhammad said that. And those recordings were never okayed and was never recited by Muhammad himself. In fact, in Quran, verse 45, verse 6, it's clear. It tells you which hadith will you believe in after Allah and his signs, meaning the ayat. So he, in the Quran, made it clear, don't write anything. The only hadith to believe in is the Quran itself, which is a hadith.
Well, my question to you then would be, which Quran, or did Muhammad approve the Quran then?
Yeah, it's only one Quran. Remember you said orally?
Well, actually.
It was the oral.
Yeah. Well, okay,
yeah,
but.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, but who has that oral Quran?
The Quran is an oral tradition. The words are still there in memorization of people who are called Hafiz. And the Hafiz are the people who are reciting the Quran. They know it by heart. It's an oral tradition, just like in Jewish tradition, they have oral tradition. The Quran is not on text. It is translated onto text by variations of length of translations from tongue to tongue, but it's only one version, and that version is what it is. It's a recital, and it's a oral tradition, a recital that is being memorized by people around the world. That's why it's safeguarded like that.
Well, my question would be then, why did Uthman then burn up the various translations of it?
Yes.
Why did he burn them then? If there was only one oral, and Muhammad wasn't alive, he was not alive, he did not approve of any of them, and there were variant translations of the Quran.
Yes. Yes.
And Uthman compiled them all and burned the ones that he disagreed with. So if you're telling me the Quran is is an oral translation, how do you know that Uthman didn't burn up the real one?
Yes, how you know that is because it's a thing called Tajweed. Tajweed is the variation of recital. One may say Kuhu Allahu, one may say Ku Allahua. It's just a matter of difference of recitation. Some people, Arabic words are closer to the Quranic Arabic text. It's closer to the curse words. So that was the problem. You had seven noted flows or seven noted recitations. Those seven particular recitations were made valid. Anything else after that was burned. Quran itself was never burned.
You still didn't answer my question.
No, yes, I did. I answered.
Okay, but let me I'll restate it because you didn't. Maybe you didn't hear me. Maybe you didn't hear me correctly. Uthman, who was the second caliph of Islam. Okay, I'm sorry. Uthman was the fourth caliph, wasn't he?
Probably the fourth, but I mean, the
okay.
caliph doesn't
All right. But at any rate, Uthman was the fourth caliph, and I can look that up here in a second as I'm talking to you.
Yeah.
But because I believe Abu Bakr was the second. I'll look it up. But at any rate, Uthman, you know, compiled all of the varied versions of the Quran. Now, this is after the Prophet Muhammad was dead. He didn't approve of any of the ones that Uthman had. Uthman then selected the one that he thought was accurate and burned the rest. Now, in that the Prophet Muhammad, and he also outlawed any other variant translations that could be found. And so if Uthman, how do we know that the one he burned wasn't the Prophet Muhammad's and the one he kept was his particular version? How do you know that?
Yes, how we know is because version and translation is two different things. There was no version of the Quran. The Quran was always been the Quran.
No,
and I told you. Yes, sir, if you're going to let me speak and answer you, it's real simple.
Well, because you're not answering me. You're going off.
I'm answering you. Because you're using the term version and translation.
Okay, well, you
like
want.
Synonymous.
Let me explain to you again. All right? They were all Arabic. Okay? They were different versions. They said different things. Uthman took the ones that he disagreed with and burned them. And he kept the one that many believe is the one we have today,
right.
The one that exists today, the Arabic version that's in print today, is many believe that that's still the unaltered one that he kept. My question to you again for the third time is, how do we know that he did not burn the wrong one?
Yes, how you know is because it's not based on version. It's based on the muftis who we do the recital. It's called Tajweed. If you have any records in front of you, it doesn't say version or translation. That's only from people's mouth. It's talking about the recitation. It was variations of recitation because some people spoke different dialects of Arabic. The dialect in the Quran is not... people don't walk around speaking Quranic Arabic.
My brother, you're talking about the spoken word. You can't burn the spoken word. What Uthman burned was the written versions of the Quran that differed from the one that he approved of. He didn't burn other people's words. He burned the written down text of Quran that he disagreed with. Now, again, this is a common matter of history. It's common.
All right. Okay. Listen, in the this will be 615 A.D. The followers of Muhammad went into the place called Habasha, which is known as Abyssinia, and that is the Ethiopia. Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Are you there?
Hello?
Yes, who is this?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hello?
I'm here.
Okay, so during the time of 615 A.D., you had the people, the followers of Muhammad, that went into Abyssinia or Ethiopia. Those people, while being there, accepted Islam. This is a historical fact. They accepted Islam. They have the same recitation in the same Quran that was given during that time. It hasn't changed or deviated or altered since. Then you have the people from that region, Abyssinia, that went into what is called East and West Africa, where they have the same original text. The same original text. So nothing has deviated since then. With Luqman and Uthman or whatever they did, was based on not version of Quran, was based on the recitation and the different dialects that came in. It wasn't the Quran. The Quran is still maintained and preserved in Ethiopia right now. You have a Quran there, and it's the same since Muhammad was there himself physically.
Okay. Now, again, what you've done is you've not answered my question. You've told me what you believe about some people. Something that, again, I guess if you go to the places you're talking about, you could if they said, yes, this is the original one, but let me tell you this. That's the point I was making about the Lamza Bible. Someone can sit there and say, the Peshitta text, yeah, this is the original one. Anyone can make that claim. And so I'm not asking you about matters of someone's beliefs. And that's where I think, we're missing each other, because you keep expressing to me your beliefs. And I keep talking about
I'm not expressing no beliefs. You keep talking about beliefs. I'm not telling you about beliefs.
Well,
I'm
telling me
about something that's so axiomatic.
Okay, well,
so
what evidence do you have that the people in the places that you were talking about, what evidence? What evidence?
Okay,
evidence is something that can be measured.
Yeah.
What evidence do you have?
Yeah, go to after Hijra, 615 A.D., after Hijra, 615 A.D., you type that in any search engine, it will pull up Muhammad's community that went into Ethiopia, and now it's 75% those.
And who is that written by?
That's written by the people themselves, the people of Ethiopia, Askim.
So the people of Ethiopia wrote, they have a web page?
Yes.
Okay. And
it's called After Hijra.
Okay, and so individuals in Ethiopia, what about the Ethiopian Jews?
What about them? I mean, we're talking about something totally different from Jews now.
No, what I'm saying is you're speaking as if because somebody in Ethiopia makes a claim that somehow that it's true. That's not a claim. That's the point that I'm making to you.
Okay.
You what it is that when you want to agree with something, you refer me, and you've done this with the things you've sent me, is you refer me to someone else saying what you say.
That,
my brother, is not evidence.
Okay, look,
if I say 1 + 1 = 7, okay, I can refer you to 19 people who will agree with me, and none of them have evidence. You have to actually put the ones out there and figure out what is mathematics and count them and come to, it's measurable. And so when I ask you for evidence, now, from an evidentiary standpoint, you've dismissed the fact that I pointed out to you that Uthman, a caliph or a leader in Islam, after Muhammad died, did in fact burn variant translations of the Quran.
Okay, that's the point that I'm making to you, sir. You keep talking on one different issue and you stay on
exactly.
That. We're wasting time.
Exactly.
We're wasting time. We can cover every statement you're making very easily. Because
discover that. Well, if we can cover every statement easily,
I mean, easily,
cover that
it's
one.
Very easy if
we'll
you just like
one.
Let me talk.
Okay,
you,
cover that.
I mean, you just
okay. We'll cover
okay.
That one. Let's
okay,
not go to
translation.
Ethiopia. Let's
yes,
go to
sir.
Uthman. Cover
okay,
that one.
Okay, look. Yes, translation is just what it is. Choice of words. Anybody who knows anything about translators or about writing of scribes of script, translation only means choice of words. It doesn't mean version.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking
I didn't
about
say
exactly
translations.
You said variant translations.
Okay, now let me, and I encourage you to go back.
Please, man, reiterate.
I encourage you to go back and listen to this again. Let me say it again for the record. All of these versions were Arabic.
Okay.
Okay?
Now, just to get off this real quick, can you produce the evidence where you got some statements where it said there was another version of the Quran? Can you produce that evidence right
now? I can produce the history that Uthman.
No. I'm saying
Uthman
the
burned.
The book,
Here. That's like asking me. Can you prove that the man has the penny he lost from his pocket?
Okay.
No. I think I made my point.
You don't have no evidence.
Okay. Wait a minute. No. There's a historical record that
where?
Uthman.
Where? I'm asking you where.
Okay. There's a historical record.
Okay. Okay. You don't have it at this point to say that.
Okay. There's a historical record, my brother, that Uthman, which you keep avoiding. You want to talk about Ethiopia?
No.
Uthman burned variant translations of the Quran.
Okay. Variant translation, not verses, but submit that evidence, please.
I'm sorry. I misspoke. Various versions of the Quran.
Okay. So I'm confused at this point. Okay. Can you produce evidence?
Can I produce evidence that he burned them?
Book
and
page.
I can produce evidence that history says
okay.
that he burned them.
Okay, so you don't have no evidence at this point.
Did you hear what I just said? That is evidence.
No, it's not. It's not any evidence.
Okay, well, if history...
out of your own mouth...
Listen to me, my brother. Did you hear what I just said? I can produce evidence that history says that he burned them. Now, you're telling me, your whole argument has been to me, is that history shows that Egypt is this and Egypt is that. That's been your entire claim. And you based your entire belief system based upon your version of history.
I'm not even giving you a version. Out of your own mouth, you're saying translation, variance of translation.
Okay, well, let me make it clear.
I gave you the history. I can give you the book number and page of that what you're talking about.
Give me the book and page number of what
I'm talking about. No, you're going to produce it because you don't think I know what I'm talking about.
You can't
so
give me the
book.
My brother, well, you're a mind reader now?
No,
give me the book and page number.
Look. This is what I'm going to do because we're obfuscating. We're running off the we're so far away from what we were initially discussing. And you're talking about the book, the Bible being infallible. Can we address this now because you don't have no evidence?
Okay, we're talking about the Bible being infallible.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to show you again how you are confusing yourself. I encourage you to go back over the last 5 days, and I've said for 5 days I am not trying to prove one true and anything else false. Proving something false does not mean what you believe to be true. In fact, I gave the example that I can prove to you all day long that 2 + 2 is not 5, but it doesn't mean that it's 7. So what are you talking about?
Okay, yes. What I'm talking about right now at this point is evidence from the Bible where you had a Moses of the Bible.
Okay, you want to change the subject again.
No, I don't want to change the subject.
Well,
what I want to do is get into something where we both are have a common ground and know what it is.
We don't have a common ground.
Moses was in Egypt with a people. Can you tell me what dynastic period in Egypt did that occur?
Okay, well, again, you want to go off into something else that has nothing to do with what we were talking about, my
okay,
brother.
But, no, we're talking about
no,
the Bible.
Well, let me explain something to you. All right? This is what I recommend you do, okay? I recommend that you get a broadcast radio show, and you can talk about whatever you want to. But you are not going to avoid the issues that I bring up to you, and I'm not going to get into an esoteric debate with you about dynasties of Egypt. You see, because
no, it's not esoteric. That's historical. Dynasties of Egypt. How is that esoteric?
Hold on. You know what esoteric means, my brother?
Yes, I do know what esoteric means.
What does it mean?
Esoteric is a number of transcendental thoughts.
No.
Metaphysics.
No,
that's
no,
all it is.
No, it's not.
Well, okay, wait.
Esoteric is reading secret meanings.
Meanings?
Yes. Secret meaning.
Oh, okay, now relate a secret meaning to a history that took place, the 19, 18, 17, first dynasty. That's history. That ain't going to do with esoteric.
There you go again. I'll tell you what's esoteric. I'm going to give you some esoteric directly.
And then relate it to my statement.
No, here's some esoteric. Like I said, if you want to direct the broadcast along your esoteric renderings, then I suggest you do that. It's easy to set up. I'm going to show you how you're esoteric, my brother. I'm going to show you. Okay? You started off last week by having me read Isaiah chapter 45, in which you told me that, you know what, why would God have them call on an Egyptian god? I read the text of the scripture, and what it says is, I am Yahweh. There's none other. There's no God beside me. I will gird you. Therefore, you have not known me. You had me read Isaiah 45:5. And the Hebrew word is Yahweh. And then you told me, well, no, it don't mean that. It's really something else. That's esoteric, my brother. That's esoteric. You also told me that there were no other nations around Egypt at the time of the Exodus. And what I pointed out to you was, you know what?
I didn't say nations, sir. I didn't say nations. Yes. I said dynasties.
Okay, so now you want to try to play a word.
Yeah, no, I ain't
you,
to go back.
You argue with me that the Hittites and all these other groups didn't exist.
I didn't say nations. I said dynasties.
No, you argue
civilizations.
With me. You argue there were no other kingdoms. You didn't even use the word dynasty.
Okay, kingdom is the same exact thing as dynasty.
Well, the Philistine. No, it doesn't mean the same thing. The Philistine was a kingdom that existed, and they were right next to the Egyptian kingdom.
During what time period?
At the exact same time.
At the first dynastic period of Egypt, Kimu, you're telling me that the Philistine dynasty exists.
This is what I'm going to do
to
you.
That is foolish, man.
This is what I'm going to do to you, my brother.
That is so wrong, man.
This is what I'm going to do for you, my brother, because you see, what it is you've convinced yourself, and I have, you know what, more power to you. More power to you, all right? You want to argue about esoteric?
I'm not even arguing. It's not esoteric. It's history.
Okay.
You
well,
just lie.
Well,
Philistines didn't exist in Egypt in the first dynasty.
Okay. Well, you
what
said
history of that?
You said they didn't exist.
Next, you're gonna say Zoroastrianism, and then I'm
well,
gonna blow that out of
the water. What about the Hittites, my brother? What about the Hittites?
In the first dynastic period
of
Kimu,
yep.
The Hittites and
Hittites
all these
were
people.
There.
Where?
Babylonians were there.
Now,
are you telling me there was
during
no
the
other?
First dynastic
listen to me, my brother. Listen to me, my brother. So you're telling me there were no other nations on the planet, but the Egyptian dynasty. Is that your point?
I said there were no other kingdoms. Go
so there were no other
that.
Kingdoms on the earth.
Right. Right.
None.
Right.
Okay. Well, then you just proved my point.
Okay, now
you proved my point.
Okay, produce your evidence that the Babylonians had a kingdom during the first kingdom of Egypt, and then I'll be quiet.
So prove that the Babylonians were with the first kingdom of I'm gonna tell you something.
No, I'm saying prove that they were around. Just prove that.
This is what I'm gonna do, my brother. I'm gonna prove this to you. Now I muted you because I'm trying to make a point to you. All right, what you try to do is you have your own esoteric renderings of things. And then what you do is you try to make people prove you wrong. That's absolutely ridiculous. I'm saying evidence. Put evidence out and let's examine the evidence. All right? Any claim that you've made without, first of all, I don't claim to be an expert of Egyptology. I don't at all because that's not where I stand. I believe that it truthfully existed, but I don't believe that there's any truth in it. Okay, so let me make it clear. Let me clear as far as the religion, you know, and the hieroglyphs, which I'm wondering how you're getting all these vowels and all this stuff from that, unless you read hieroglyphs. But, okay, that's your thing, all right? But anytime you come out into the realm where you can be measured, you have failed miserably. Do you realize how I just quoted to you the passage you had me go to, Isaiah chapter 45, verse 5, and you asked, and anyone can go back, and this was on the 7th, so if someone wants to listen to it, where you told me, why would the Jewish God have his people call upon a god of Egypt? So I went to the text, and I read it to you, and when I read it to you, you've never had a comment on it since. See, that's the one time you could be measured. Instead of retreating into the secrecy of the things that you claim that, you know what, I believe you're sincere about them. I do. I believe you're sincere. I believe that, you know what, you may know your stuff. Or as far as I know, like I said, I don't study ancient Egyptology. You could be making some stuff up. I have no idea. Have no idea. But the things you have can be measured on, you failed miserably. Let me give you a couple of other things you failed miserably on. When I said Elijah Muhammad, first of all, it was my point on my broadcast. I quoted Elijah Muhammad, who said that Christian, the English word Christian, means to be crystallized into one. And I said Elijah's wrong. That word does not mean that. You came on board and told me that etymology was your thing, and it goes back to the ancient Egypt. And when I asked you, well, where did Elijah Muhammad say that? Then you told me, well, he said get to the root of a thing, and you just made up anything to get back to your secret place so you can hide in the things that, again, I don't know whether you're making them up or not. I have no idea. But you went from the clear writings of Elijah Muhammad that can be evaluated. You don't want to function in a place that can be evaluated. That's evidence. It's measurable. You don't want to function there. Instead, what you did was you tried to retreat. You tried your best to retreat back to Egypt. Said Elijah, that's where he got it from. And when I pointed out to you that he said, and I quoted page 50 and page 56 of Our Savior Has Arrived, where he said he got it from the Lord of the Worlds, then you turned on Elijah Muhammad. Well, no, he didn't. I don't believe Farr told him that. How would you know? I'm not. Look, you don't have to agree with the statement that Farr is Allah, but how do you know Farr didn't tell Elijah that? How would you know that? Were you there? I wasn't there. I know John Muhammad, who's Elijah Muhammad's brother, who died recently, said Farr did say that, and he was there. So there's an individual who lived in my lifetime who made that claim that his brother did, in fact, hear Farr claim to be Allah because he said he himself heard it. But yet you disagree with it because you can't get to your secret place. What's your secret place? You want to get past Farr to whatever it is that you believe. All right? The reality is what I said about Elijah was wrong. I was absolutely right. You want to take the word Christian back to Christ, as you said it. When in reality, it comes from Christianos, which just means of Christ. Like I said from the very beginning, you want to debate me about Belial not, or Muhammad not having slaves, and I quote you something from the Hadith, and in fact, it said that he did sell a slave. It did. Now, you could sit there and say, well, that was 200 years later. Well, you're sitting there trying to make me believe all this Egyptian stuff that you have not even, you haven't proven to me that you have the capacity. Or this, the competency, and when I say competency, I'm not saying that as an insult. I'm saying that as the acquired or learned skill to define to me what an Egyptologist is. And the stuff that you sent me has been all over the board. You send me John Hendrick Clark, Pan-African black nationalist. You sent me Lamza, you know, the Way International. You sent me a French where it's just like anywhere where you can find something obscure is where you're hiding. And you know what? Using the word hiding, that is an inflammatory word. I apologize for that. But it does seem that's where you want to go. When I pointed out Uthman, what Uthman did to the variant translations of the Quran. There is and what he did was in accordance to the Quran, because the Quran does provide for abrogation. It does provide for abrogation, which means Allah at any time can say, okay, new stuff. That is provided for in the Quran. All right, and so I don't have any problem with that. But you deny that Uthman did it. Burned the variant translations. Now, most Muslims will say he just burned the bad translations. You say it absolutely did not happen. And again, with absolutely no evidence. And I say versions, you want to keep on talking about translations, I said versions. And I made it clear to you they were all Arabic. But different people wrote different things. The Quran was not written in Muhammad's lifetime. You made the point that he didn't approve of the Hadith. I made the point that, you know what, he didn't approve of the Quran. It wasn't written in his lifetime. And the individuals who wrote it down after his death wrote variant translations of it. Uthman, seeking to solidify Islam, burned all the variant translations. Now, you can come up with any other reason as to why he did it. But to sit there and say that it didn't happen based upon what? I really don't get that, my brother. I don't. And I agree with your whole attitude of saying, you know what, I don't want to argue. I don't want to argue with you either. But what I will do is I'm coming up on my last 10 minutes. I will give you time to say, you know, whatever you want to say as last thoughts. And then what I will do is I will take some time and look at some of the stuff that you sent me. Though it's going to be difficult because basically all I see is a bunch of stuff that other people have said. One of the sites you sent me, and you know what, I'm not even going to say that because you did admit that you had to throw some stuff together. Maybe the stuff on your friend or your study partner, whatever it is, website, maybe that stuff's better. So I'll wait to see that stuff. Anyway, let me give you a chance to say whatever you want to say. Go ahead.
Yeah, and like I said, no hard feelings. If I said anything to disrespect you, that wasn't my intent. Okay, what I was initially emailed you and told you that I'm a student of Sheikh Anta Diop, who is the world's leading anthropologist, archaeologist in that field. Egyptologist, or whatever you want to call it. It's really not Egyptology. It's Kemetology. He's the leading professor in that field, and most scholars of antiquity use him as a cross-reference. Gerald Massey, Sigmund Freud use him as a cross-reference, and various of other people who study that field use him as a cross-reference because he speaks the tongue that connects back to the pyramid text. Dr. Henry Clark was an accident because he has a bias with Islam, that was an accident. I didn't even know nothing about this new Jala site that they had that had him on the video. Actually, I was sending Sheikh Anta Diop's video and mistakenly sent him, but that's another subject in itself. So that's where my validation is coming from when I speak about Kemet. Now, he was talking about the first dynastic period, second, third, fourth, fifth. You said the Philistines were around as a kingdom. That's something that anybody who studied history can figure that out. So I don't even have to speak about that issue. But to make a statement that about Luqman or Uthman or Abu Bakr in reference to Hadith and in reference to Quran is a living book. All the people who were there right there were Hafiz. So they were not writing the book, of course, like they didn't in Jesus' time write the book. That didn't come to after him. So what they were doing was living the book at that time. Some people wanted some other additional things. So they wrote additional things called Hadith, Sahih Bukhari, Tirmidhi, or whoever wrote it. It's various of books that came after Muhammad. He never okayed it. He never okayed these books that came after him. So his statements in there are basically suspect. Unless it's being corroborated by the Quran, and that's the best criterion. And that's what Muhammad said in the Quran itself. So the Quran is speaking in reference to the contradiction that is in any book. Any book you bring, the Quran will confirm it or it will negate it. So the statement about the Quran itself as being in versions, that never happened. Because there's only one Quranic text. There's no other Quranic text. Nobody speaks Quran. The Arabic of the Quran was foreign to Muhammad. That's in the Quran. They said, well, where you get this Arabic from? This is foreign to us. And these are the people at that time of Arabia, not Saudi Arabia. And that's in the Quran. Because the Quran is a recitation. It's an oral transmitted book. So that's the reason why the verses of people who were speaking different dialects that may have came from Syria or may have came from different places were adding in words where they didn't belong in the recitation. So that was the problem, not the text itself. The text has never been contradicted. No one that I know. So you can bring an Arab or whoever you want to bring, and I can speak with him about things that I know you're not prepared for, dealing with the Arabic of the Quran and the 24 or 5 dialects that's out there in Arabia. So that was the point that I was making. So it wasn't about versions. It was about translations, as you said, variations of words. People want to use these choice words like angel. The word angel is not even in the Quran. The word is malak. Just like it is in the Hebrew. The word is malak, it's not angel. So it's variations of words people use, and they use those words out of the context of what the Quran itself was saying. So that was the problem. And these people you talked about were Hafiz themselves. So they knew when a word came up, that word didn't belong in that particular flow, because there's a flow that happens with the Quran. It's called tajweed. I'm done.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it. I just wanted to give you some time. My brother, mm-hmm. I mean, you are an and adamant, you know, speaker of what it is that you believe. But how you and I view evidence is entirely different. So what I'm going to do here now is I am going to read the, I'm reading from, let's see, the Quran. It's in the front, the introduction of the Quran and a particular version of the Quran or translation that I am reading from. Of course, it is Ahmadiyyat. It is the Maulana Muhammad Ali. Anyway, there in the introduction, and I'm going to read this, and this is under the heading, Uthman made copies from Abu Bakr's collections. All right, and I'm just going to read this to you in a few minutes before I go off the air. The copies made under Uthman's orders were faithful copies of Abu Bakr's collection. All right, he doesn't say Muhammad, he says Abu Bakr's. All right, did the copies transcribed under the orders of Uthman differ from the original collection made by Zayd in the time of Abu Bakr? Okay, now Zayd is the individual who called for the Quran to be written itself because a bunch of the individuals who recited the Quran died in battle, and so therefore it became necessary to write down the Quran. And let me go back and read that to you under the introduction. Abu Bakr's collection in writing according to the Prophet's collection as preserved in memory. Wasn't written, as preserved in memory. The most important question with regard to the collection made under the orders of Abu Bakr is this. Did it accord in every respect with the Quran as stored and collected in the memories of his companion and as repeated and recited publicly as well as privately in the lifetime of the Holy Prophet? There is not the least reason to believe that it did not. In the first place, none of the compilers were actuated by any motive to make any change in the text. The earnest desire of all engaged in the task was to have a complete and faithful collection of what had been revealed to the Holy Prophet, and Zayd had only undertaken the task after the full appreciation of the difficulties. Secondly, the collection began only 6 months after the death after the Prophet, while almost all of those who had heard the Quran from his lips were still alive. The Quran, as recited by the Holy Prophet, was still fresh in the memories of his companions, and any tampering with the text could have been easily brought to notice. Thirdly, there were many amongst them who could repeat the whole of the Quran in memory. There were others who knew large portions and kept it fresh in memory. And so he goes on and he explains, this is Abu Bakr's version that they put together because, again, there was a battle and a lot of the individuals were killed. Anyway, so we're moving on to the third caliph, who is, let me see, I'm sorry, the fourth caliph was Uthman. I believe it was Abu Bakr, then Umar, and then, okay, let's go back to Uthman. All right, thus copies of the Quran transcribed under Uthman's orders were true and faithful copies of the collection of Abu Bakr, which we have seen and was in the custody of Hafsa after the death of Umar. Zayd was one of the men who were now called upon to make fresh copies from it and to remove any difference of dialect or variations in the mode of writing certain words that might possibly arise. Uthman gave orders that the reading of the Quraysh should be adopted in preference to any other reading. But the only example of such variation that has been preserved to us is in the reports is that Zayd read a word as taboo, and the Quraysh read it as tabut, there being a very slight difference as to the manner in which the final letter of the word was written without there being the slightest change in significance. And such importance was given to this trifling difference that the matter was reported to Uthman for decision. All right. Now, let me jump down. Uthman's action in burning private copies, supported by all. Had the action of Uthman in destroying all private copies of the Holy Quran been arbitrary or unjustifiable, the commandments or the companions of the Holy Prophet would never have yielded to it. They, however, not only approved of his action, but also willingly carried out his orders. A request had come to him from distant Syria that he should take immediate steps to put a stop to variations in the readings, and that he could not do And this he could not do except by issuing official copies of the Holy Quran as collected by Abu Bakr and suppressing all private copies, which were perhaps not made with the sufficient care and might have contained any variation of reading. Nor did Uthman take the step without consulting the companions. Ali is reported to have said, "Do not any aught of Uthman but what is good," for he did not take the step with regard to the suppression of private copies of the Quran, except after consulting with us. He spoke to us, saying, "What do you think of this reading? I've been informed that some say to others, my reading is better than yours. Therefore, I think may amount to heresy." So, in other words, there were various other ones that he decided, "I think this may amount to heresy." We asked him what steps he thought advisable to take in this matter. He replied that he thought it necessary to gather people on one reading. To this, we all heartily agreed. Okay? There are said to have been 12 members in the syndicate which superintended the transcription of the copies, and that's the one particular one that he had. And so, to make a long story short, because I'm coming up on the end of my broadcast, what Uthman did was he gathered all the ones that they considered may have been heresy or may not have been written down with the care as the ones that he believed were true, and he therefore burned all the variant private collections of the Quran and made copies of the one he believed to be accurate. And again, this is in the front of a Quran. This is the history as recorded in the front of a Quran. And so again, whether you agree with it or not, it's measurable. It's measurable. Individuals who believe the Quran to be inspired word of Allah recorded it, not just someone who disagrees with it. So again, that's measurable. All right. At any rate, we are coming up on the end of the broadcast. In fact, we are over the end of the broadcast. We're a little over today. I appreciate my brother calling in. Absolutely. Again, I think that anyone who doesn't stand for something will fall for anything. And there are many who say that some of us, and I'm saying this universally because I'm sure my brother probably feels this way about me, that some of us who stand for things will fall for anything. And I can certainly say the same thing about some of the things that I just think he holds to. I think that he's sincere. I think he's sincerely wrong. He probably thinks I'm sincere but sincerely wrong as well. And that's fine. Debating, there's nothing wrong with debating. Not going to divide with him. We are both still black men, but I believe he is sincerely wrong. Absolutely. So anyway, we'll pick it up tomorrow, and I'm just probably going, I've already finished the text on the Nation of Islam, so I'll probably just continue an open discussion tomorrow. You can feel free to give me a call, you know, chime in with your questions or your comments. The forum submissions have gone through the roof with commentary on this, so some of you guys call in, or ladies, call in. Some of the individuals sending emails, give a call in. Let's give us your take on this particular subject matter. So until tomorrow, this is Rick Young, the Apologist. See you next time. Thank you for joining me for today's edition of Ark Studies Live. I'm Rick Young. The Apologist segment focuses exclusively on addressing your questions and comments concerning hardcore doctrinal issues relating to biblical difficulties, countercult studies, and Christian apologetics. For more information about ARC, go to the World Wide Web at www.arcstudies.org. Again, that's www.arcstudies.org.